What's up, guys? Wall J here, and I'm here with my co-host.
Heart of War. Across the table there, we got Matador Roja, Sherry Arnold. Across the boards, producer Chris.
Hello.
And special guest, Bobby Thompson, owner of Checkmate, and starting a new podcast, Jiu-Jitsu and Coffee.
Yep, that's it.
I'm so excited to hear this thing. You got two episodes down already.
Yep.
Beautiful. Can you tell us a little bit about the podcast and kind of how you have it structured and what makes it maybe different than others?
Yeah, so I'm still kind of finding my way. Yeah, I'm new to podcasts. Right now, my goal is just to interview as many Jiu-Jitero in Jacksonville as possible and then, you know, kind of branch out. But it's kind of to introduce people in the region or to the area to other Jiu-Jitero, talk about their experience with Jiu-Jitsu, kind of like their regimen, diet, whatnot. And then I run everyone through the woke meter. So just to kind of be different because it's a passion of mine.
The woke meter. The woke meter. What is the woke meter? Are you woke, son?
Yeah. So I'm into conspiracies. I love conspiracies. So any
Rodriguez.
Conspiracy.
Yeah. You got to talk to this
I'm
man.
Addicted. So I just, you know, I run everyone through like the top 10 or 15 government and alien related, whatever.
Nice.
You know. So that's it. And then we cap it off with just some like random jiu-jitsu talk, whatever comes to mind.
Alien related. So you're like into Area 51 and all that stuff. Roswell.
I mean, I'm not so much into those. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'll watch stuff on that. But there's things that are more interesting to me. I'm like a huge fan of Zechariah Sitchin, who is, if you're familiar with Anunnaki, I'm really interested in listening to or learning about that. Or Graham Hancock. Lloyd Pye, there's all these really sharp guys out there, Stephen Greer, but anybody. I listen to people, I don't even know who they are. Megalithic structures blow my mind, you know. We can't create these things today. They're out there, and we can't make them. Like, Elon Musk couldn't make Sacsayhuaman. People don't understand that today, is that they go out there and look at it. That blows my mind. Like, how did that get here? If we can't produce that today with all our money and all our technology – how did that get there thousands of years
and
ago?
Simple building materials too. It's not like it's like some sort of complicated alien. Like our buildings look very complicated, but they can't stand the test of time. Like something as simple as that and complicated.
Huge stones, just huge stones with like sometimes 12 angles, 13 angles, and they're every angle, every stone is different, and they're fit together perfectly that you can't get a razor blade between them, but also front to back, and these things are 3 feet thick. We could only do that with a CNC today. Yeah. And they want to say, like, you know, the mainstream archaeology will say, or historians will say, well, that was done with copper and hammers. Like, that's impossible. That's anyone who knows, who works with stone would tell you that's absolutely impossible.
So you're thinking that, you know, like the Egyptian pyramids and all that, is that what we're talking about?
Could be the pyramids as well. Yeah, those have the same similar construction. The real crazy thing is we had the same type of construction going on all over the world. You know, it was in Asia, it was in the Middle East, it was in South America, everywhere.
Yeah,
So that stuff just blows my mind. And there's other theories out there, like a whole other theory that completely captivates me. Is the thought that humanity's wiped out every so often, every 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 years, you know, it gets wiped out. And there was a guy named Emanuel Velikovsky who around 1950, he wrote a book called When Worlds Collide. And his theory is that humanity gets wiped out every so often, not on a regular schedule. It could be 5,000 years, it could be 10,000, 50,000. And his proof for that is the moon. If you look at the moon, it's been hit so many times that there is no, you know, it's impact after impact after impact.
Yeah.
The problem is the moon has no atmosphere, so it shows all those craters. And some of these craters are 600 miles across. We talk about the devastation that would be done to Earth if an asteroid the size of the Empire State Building hit. It would you know, decimate humanity.
Yeah.
And if we have 600 mile across asteroids flying through our solar system, which we do, the moon's proof of it, and we've been here 5 billion years and the moon's been hit more times than we can imagine, well, humanity has been wiped out again and again and again. That kind of is common sense for me. Like I kind of agree with the theory. And if you listen to his, his, what's the word for it? I'm drawing a blank on the word. You know, now he has kind of people he's passed on, and there's people that kind of take his theory and run with it.
So do you think it's something like this, right? So we have these catastrophic events that happen to the Earth, and humanity is completely wiped out. Do you think there's just like a few little outliers or whatever that happen to survive that little bit, survive through that crazy, you know, of course they're dumb as shit. You know,
how can you survive that though?
Well, who knows, man? Maybe they're in small caves, pocket of, in the small pocket of the Earth where it wasn't affected as much, and they can just suck it up and survive through it. And then, like, for you know, they rebuild. And you know, it only took us how many years? Not even 100 years ago from, like, no TV to look at our computers now.
Right.
That's 100 years.
Well,
like, racism and 60, 70 years ago, like, people, like, had to drink out of different water fountains. It's not that long ago. This is like a generation.
Now you're comparing like apples to oranges.
No. I'm just talking about. No. What I'm saying is like technology wise. Yes. I'm just saying. See how short of a distance it was. It goes from for change. You see how short of a time it is for real change. Not even 100 years. No TV. TV. Crazy computers. 3D shit going on.
I just hope I'm dead when the next asteroid
hits.
Look,
bro, I can go onto my phone right now, and I can pull up fucking pictures.
Please stay off your phone.
And text messages.
Oh, my God.
I can take pictures of you, and I can send it all the way to Texas to my boy, Robbie. Well, I'm going to do that right now.
Listen, could you please get off your fucking phone?
I'm making a point here.
No, well, I get it. Do you like my new case? I get it. No,
do you like my new case?
It looks like it's a girl's case.
Dude, it's red. It's dope as shit. I have like
my little dope pony. I agree. It's a dope. It's a dope case.
See, he knows what I'm talking about. No, but he just
looks a little bit more manly than yours.
Okay, whatever. All I know is that I had a black case. I've set it down. Can find it. Got a red case. Set it down. Can find it.
That's until your dog gets a hold of it.
He's at which dog?
You know, there's one other thing that I'd like to bring up is that if you think about this, if we were decimated today, if an asteroid hit Earth, no information we have would make it. I mean, how long would it take for first off, let's say you knew that in 1 year we were going to hit by an asteroid. How would you save data? How would you save the knowledge that we have? We have no way to save it beyond, you know, floppy disks gone or, you know, CDs gone. Hard drives won't last that long. And mind you, we're not going to have electricity. You're not going to have a way to save that information. We don't have a way to save information today. If you were decimated, even if you had these things, if you couldn't use them to copy them to others, which you wouldn't be able to, it's like, yeah, we know how to use a phone. We know how to drive a car, but we can't make a phone, can't make a car. The moment that infrastructure is gone, it just becomes lower, you know, three generations from now. Yeah, we used to be able to call someone on the other side of the planet. Dad's smoking crack again. He's on the marijuana, whatever.
So how deep is the impact once it happens? Do we know?
Well, as far as the impact, that doesn't really matter. It's more the smoke and everything blocking the sun out of the sky.
Well, you could store data in a sub and send it down. And
yeah, but sub needs fuel, and how long would – you know, how long could you – you need food delivered to it every so often to keep the staff going. You need – the infrastructure would be gone. Like if you really – if you think it through, there's no way – and let's think about this. Let's go back – let's say 50,000 years ago. You know, we've been here – the Earth's arguably been here between 4 and 5 billion years. Let's say 50,000 years ago, there was a civilization that got wiped out. Let's say there were 1 million cars on the Earth, or I don't know, 10 million, whatever. They'd be gone. There'd be no trace of a car, no trace. You leave a car for 10,000 years, there won't be, it's dust. Everything, the engine block will disintegrate.
I want to say the History Channel did some sort of like breakdown of like the time schedule of how everything would break down, how animals, domesticated animals would go wild, and how there would be no signs of civilization, period, in a very short amount of time. 10,000 years?
Yeah.
That's nothing.
Makes me wonder, you know, let's say that happened like 50,000 years ago. Were they more advanced than we were at that point?
Strong possibility. Because what did I say? Well, what happened in the last 100 years? Now imagine this, and let's times that by another 1,000 years of the advanced technology that we already have now. 1,000 years from now, let's say we're not all decimated. What kind of crazy shit we have then? We come to an understanding like, hey, listen, man, this is all going to end. Let's create something so maybe the next generation group will be able to – I eat pyramids.
Well, if they're all decimated, how does anybody come back?
Small little pockets of people. Yeah, small little
– a chicken laid an egg and then a man came out.
Well, the theory is that we don't all die off. Like some go underground. You know, we have bunkers or whatnot, and some survive. And then we go on to repopulate the Earth, and then, you know, so that's Emmanuel Velikovsky's theory. But lots of people have adopted that theory, and a lot of people don't know that he was one of the ones who popularized it. But it's an interesting thing to think about. If you look at the moon, it's very likely if you just, you know, look at the moon fascinates me. You know, an interesting thing about the moon is you hear the term the dark side of the moon, which I heard like my whole life.
Transformers. Yep.
But I didn't know until a few years ago that we never see the backside of the moon. It's locked in as the Earth spins, it's locked in orbit. Like the odds of that happening are so minuscule. What are the odds that the moon doesn't spin? Like we never see the back of it. Never. It's always the same side facing us as we like. It just stopped spinning facing us. You know, that's crazy.
On the backside,
never knew that.
Is a complete civilization that we don't know about.
See, now I'm thinking. Base. Now I'm thinking Transformers is based on a true story. No? Okay, never mind.
Hey, you know what? Though you have a redeeming quality. I really like your T-shirt, my friend.
It's
pretty dope.
Who did the artwork?
Some guy.
So we hashed out a bunch of different like logo ideas and so on and so forth, and then we came up with the idea of trying to make it something that.
And by way, he means him.
Anybody could wear it, and it doesn't necessarily have to mean a jiu-jitsu school. It could just be a logo, an art award without the JJ jiu-jitsu. It's just like Sengzu, you know what I mean? It's just its own little brand, and it just happened to also be part of our school, art award jiu-jitsu. A lot of those facts, a lot of those ways of thinking, I think fits into jiu-jitsu as well. So, make it a nice, clean, simple, easy design. We hashed over a whole bunch of things. We got this designer off of Instagram after trying a couple other ones, and it just didn't work out. And I really liked how he took the AOW, the Art of War, and made it kind of look Chinese style of writing.
Yeah, it's dope.
Thank you, man. Appreciate that.
Yeah,
so,
it's pretty dope.
Yeah, so we jumped on that.
So nice, Brandon Colbert says, happy birthday, Bobby.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, Bobby.
Thank you.
Hey,
what is the other
That's
one?
That's the 11th.
It's yesterday.
Yeah.
Wait, related. What day is it today?
I think today's today's the 12th, right? Yes, the 12th is yesterday.
Happy late birthday.
Thank you.
And he has some dumb comment. He said, if the moon was made out of barbecue, it would be a spare ribs and it would eat you.
I don't know what that means.
It's deep.
Super deep.
If the moon was made of barbecue,
spare ribs would eat it. I don't know what you mean, so I'm gonna pass on it.
Brandon's an interesting guy.
Bro, are you high?
I can't always follow his train of thought, but I love him all the same.
I think he's
Brandon's a good dude. Who's got to hang out with Brandon? Raise your hand. I like him. He's just a good dude. I like his hair now, though. I like his hair longer.
Does he have the man bun going?
Yes, sometimes he pulls in a man bun. But let me tell you why he does this, right? So his mother has, has cancer. And so he grows his hair out. He's growing it not to a certain length. He's going to cut it off so that way she can have his hair. So this guy, awesome. he's just a good dude. You know what I mean? He's funny. He's fun to hang out with.
I don't know about funny.
He's funny looking. He's funny. He's a funny dude. He's a good-hearted dude, man. So like just little things like that. He does a bunch of things like that. I mean, he doesn't tell people this stuff, but I know because I hang out with him a lot.
So why are you putting his business out there?
Well, just that one bit. I just want to highlight.
I just want to highlight
my friend. Let people know that
maybe he's a good wanted dude. To keep that to himself.
Nah, it's fine. I'm his friend. I can say whatever I want. Right, Brandon? You just put a thumbs up down there and we'll let everybody know.
He said, Art, please don't tell my stuff online.
See? Yeah, that's not how you write. That's how Wallow broken English speaks. So, Bobby, some things that people don't know about you. One, that you started a podcast, so we're kind of help promoting that. And it's big in the jiu-jitsu community.
He's a black belt.
And he's a black belt for sure. And we definitely want to go into kind of your history and your thinkings for yourself as far as jiu-jitsu and how it affects you. But where was I going? Because you just ruined that for me. Let's just jump onto that. Tell us a little bit of your history of like why you started jiu-jitsu, how it's kind of like your thoughts about it has maybe evolved over time, and what brings you up to today.
I think I got in the same reason we all did. I hope so. Hoyce Gracie, man. I wasn't into any sports. In 93, I watched Hoyce beat up all these dudes, and I was just like, damn, that works. Because I had started to take other martial arts. I took Taekwondo, and I wasn't sold on it. I didn't get confidence. Like, I could kick someone's ass.
I was the same thing. I was like, you can't punch him in the head?
Well, it wasn't convincing to me. I was like, I got in a fight with this black belt, and granted, I fought dirty. I smacked him in the face with a food tray, but I won the fight. You know, and I was like, well, where'd that Taekwondo go? It wasn't really.
You won prison rules on him.
It was prison rules. Nonetheless, I was like, I just wasn't convinced. Like when I took Taekwondo, I just wasn't. You know, they had us standing up doing this. And I'm like, what, I'm going to do this in a fight? Whatever that is, that stupid thing. You're I don't know.
Yeah, nobody ever questions that. Nobody ever questions that. They don't.
It didn't seem real to me. Yeah. So when I saw Hoist beating all these dudes' asses, I was like, man, that is dope. And then the very first day, I remember I was working out in the gym, and I'm like, well, that's like some secret art. You can't learn it. And I'm in Jacksonville in 2002, and I see this dude with a Hoist Gracie shirt. And I walk up, and I'm like, dude, that shirt is fucking dope. And he's like, man, they're opening a school. So he told me where it was. I was the first student, the day it opened, January 1st, 2003. I was there. It was like two or three of us. And it was 5 days a week since then. I've never taken a break. I've just been thoroughly addicted. So 15 and a half years now.
Yeah.
So who do you start with?
What's that? Who?
When did you start?
I started January 1st, 2000. Well, technically, I started in like December. I started because he was kind of teaching out of Alex Limbaugh's school. So I went and trained at Alex's school. Larry didn't officially open the school yet. So technically, I started in December of 2002. But
you're talking about Larry Sheely?
Larry Sheely, yeah.
Okay.
At the time, what I didn't know was that Lionel Perez was teaching, and he had a few guys. It was small. It was kind
of
like this.
Lionel Perez was one of the originals here.
Yeah.
He's over in Key West now, right?
Yeah. Lionel is like here's the thing. It was a small group of them. A lot of people don't know. Before Larry opened up his school in 2003, in 1995, right after he saw Hoist fight, he flew to California and started taking lessons. He was flying back and sharing that. And he got a group together. And part of that group was Lionel Perez and Thomas Strickland and Brett Hicks. And there was – he started the original group. And his knees were – the guy had bad knees. He was a little bit older. He had some knee surgeries, kind of quit training. And Lionel and those guys, as I understand the story, they kept on doing their thing. Well, I never knew about them. They weren't doing any advertising, any marketing. They had a small group that were doing their own thing. The first – time I heard about a school, man, I was there. I was part of it.
Yeah.
And had some good dudes. Thomas Strickland started training there. Brett Hicks started training there. And they were blue belts already and when I started training. And they, you know, they were going down and cross training with Gracie Orlando. I can't remember his name, the owner of it. But he used to put on the IBJJF Worlds here because they used to be on the East Coast.
Oh, yeah.